Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Twitter. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is time once again for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. I love your slot. Would greatly appreciate your advice on how best to manage disciplining a three-year-old girl. I would like to get a consistent approach on how to handle it when she won't share, pushes her little sister, or just says no to everything. I've tried the naughty step, but she doesn't understand the concept, and I feel it was too upsetting for her, so no gain. I know she's too young to understand the consequences of her behaviour, but I would like her to realise it's not okay to do these things. Any advice? Also, any helpful strategies in encouraging sharing? I try to model the behaviour with my husband, read stories about sharing, point it out to her when I see other children sharing. She did start preschool this year. That may help.
I think that will help, actually, because other children will be negotiating that with her. And I think, Sean, that's something to really hold in mind when the concept of sharing is at the fore, because learning to share is a process. And it's important, you know, beyond just basic manners, and I'm not saying they're not important, but beyond just being polite. Learning to share also supports the development of cooperative play. It helps children to develop a capacity for negotiation, though some of them nail that one by 2 years old. But how to negotiate, the art of compromise, give and take, that reciprocity that she's coming into that stage of developing is all supported. So there's multiple pro-social benefits to sharing. I also remember, though, reading something many years ago that this whole suggestion about inviting your child to share rather than instructing, that they have a toy, their sibling wants it, or whatever the scenario is, and you say, instead of give it to your sister, you say, I know when you're done with it, you'll let your sister have a turn. And then your child is more likely to self-direct the sharing that you can then praise their effort. Now, all of that said, I just want to go back to this as a three-year-old child. You're absolutely right that she's not old enough to understand the consequences, because cause and effect thinking and certainly the consistency around it is still developing. The best discipline for a child this age is distraction, redirection. That doesn't mean that you do permissive parenting. You still say that gentle yet firm, no, we don't do whatever it is I've just done. And you can begin that ACT, acknowledge the feeling. I know you're frustrated or you're angry or you didn't want to wait your turn. Communicate a limit. We don't hit, push, kick, whatever it is that's happened, and target an alternative. How about you and I blow up a balloon and we punch that? How about we punch this cushion? How about we play chasing? Target an alternative behavior in that art of distraction, redirection. Two-year-olds, just hold in mind, everyone, that two-year-olds won't grasp the concept of sharing, okay? I mean, they like the praise you give them, but they're not doing that. Oh, I'm getting the praise because I shared. I should do that again. That isn't there. And at 3 years old, where this little one is, that concept of sharing is really only beginning to develop, okay? They're beginning to understand it. That means I haven't yet fully grasped it. And even though I'm beginning to understand the premise of it and that it's something nice to do, I may not want to do it. And that egocentric bit, well, I just don't want to, will actually take over. So I think exactly what you're doing is really good, you know, praising examples of it, spotlighting it, modeling it, sharing with her, naming what you're doing. All of that is really good. I'm going to support you in dropping this naughty step idea. I don't encourage it. Children under seven do not developmentally, they do not self-regulate their emotional state. So isolating a child in a dysregulated state and saying, calm down and let's reconnect when you are, you're literally putting the radiator on and leaving the window open. That isn't going to land. And actually in that dysregulated state, when I'm isolated from you, I'll actually likely spiral, spike, or get worse in that, but I'm not learning from it. It's really, you're better off to practice some kind of a time in, as I said, through ACT or distraction over that. You could start changing some of your play now that she's in preschool. You could play games that involve turn taking, because that's integral to the process of sharing. You could do impulse control play, because when you say, you have a three-year-old who won't share, pushes her sister and says no to everything. That sounds like a fairly classic three-year-old to me. That's exactly what a three-year-old does. That impulsivity, that I'm frustrated, those flash points of temper, I don't have that regulation capacity. So impulse control play is stop-start. Like musical statues is a great example of that. Playing red light, green light. You know, you can move when I say green light, you have to stop when I say red light. And that stop-start is going to slow it down. Not doing ready, steady, go or one, two, three, go, because impulsive kids will go in anticipation of the three or the go. So instead saying, when I say strawberry or when I say banana, you can go. And it anchors her in the moment and helps her tune into your cue, and she doesn't act till your say so. And that can all be really, really helpful in that type of play. Playing mirrors, follow the leader, Simon Says, Mother May I, all of that type of play is really good at supporting co-regulation, impulse control and turn-taking reciprocity. So there's lots you can do. Just don't do the naughty step thing. That's the only thing in this I'd say stop doing. I think you could start doing some of the play and keep doing the emphasizing on good sharing that you are doing.
We have a four-year-old girl. She's a very happy, normal child. But over the past year, she's picked up a habit which is concerning us. She's been sitting on a small ride-on car and then raises her legs backwards off the ground, almost in a kneeling position, with the legs and feet off the ground, and holds that position for extended periods of time. The effort of this causes her entire body to shake as it looks very strenuous, almost like squatting. She calls it her exercise, but she now seems to be doing it more and more often. This piqued my wife's curiosity, so she asked our daughter why she liked doing it. To our surprise, she said it felt nice as it tickles her wee-wees. The vibration on the seat, we're guessing. My wife suggested I Google it, needless to say. When I started Google stimulating, I realised what a mistake that would be and didn't proceed any further. We don't mind her doing it unless it is something we should be concerned about.
Oh, I was just laughing when you're like, so I Google. I'm like, do not Google that. And yeah, everybody listening is going to go, I'm going to Google it. What did he find? But I just think, yeah, look, self-stimulation or toddler masturbation. I just think, unfortunately, the M word can be loaded in shame and we have to take that away from it and call it what it is. It's actually totally normal, like totally, totally normal. It is the result of equally normal body exploration at this age. I always think it's interesting when kids are doing this, because little girls tend to discover, you know, self-pleasure via exactly this, rocking or swaying or squatting or sitting in a particular way. They didn't set out for that to be self-stimulating or a form of masturbation, but in maybe doing something or trying something, and they were like, oh, that actually feels really nice. And who doesn't want to keep doing something that feels nice, especially children? But little girls tend to discover it that way, Sean, because obviously, you know, boys, they have access to their penis from very young age. It's there. Girls, it can take them a little bit longer to discover body parts. And so this is like in the realm of absolute normal. I wouldn't have any concerns. What it is about is about teaching what behavior is to be done in private and what behavior is to be done in public without shaming. And that can be a fine line. Oh, don't do that here. It's all about tone. It's like, this is okay. And what you want to do, if no one is around, like she's 4 years old, if nobody's around, it's just you guys and you're getting about your day or whatever you're doing, just leave it. If people are around, you might want to distract or redirect her, maybe consider saying, hey, can you come help me with this? And oh, look, here's your teddy bear. Let me give you a tight squeezy hug, because you're not just distracting her in it. Don't do that. But you're giving her another form of soothing and comfort. And otherwise, you say, you know, if you like to rock, and you've told us you do, that's something you can do when you're in your bedroom. It's not something we do in the family room. She's only four. I would be thinking 5, 6, you'll get much more of a realization from her going, oh, right, okay. At four, she'd be like, why? This is where the car is, or whatever it is she's sitting on. It makes sense to do it here. But just hold in mind that the sexual side of this, that's not in a four-year-old's understanding. You know, general stimulation, it feels nice. The sexuality side of it doesn't come in that association till much, much later. Often the issue with this is that the adults observing it, parents, in other words, or whoever else is there, we get embarrassed. We're like, oh my goodness, what are they doing? We might laugh out of that nervous release, but actually she's not doing anything wrong. She sounds like a curious little girl who is like, hey, this, I like this. I'm just going to keep going. and just put a boundary on it that's appropriate. That's really the challenge here. But don't psychopathologize it. Don't think there's anything wrong in this.
Yeah, though it's, from the description, it sounds kind of like halfway between yoga and masturbation.
Oh, I was looking at that going, wow, like her little core must be really good if she can hold that position. So yeah. I imagine, you know, when she's calling it exercise, she discovered this in a really natural way and it just happened to feel nice rather than seeking it out to feel nice.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not wrong. It is exercise. I am separated for over 2 years now from my husband, with whom I have a 5-year-old. I recently spoke with his first wife and learned more about their marriage. It certainly seems that he could do more harm than good as a parent. He creates false personal histories, is emotionally manipulative and unreliable. How can I explain this to the courts and the person who will make recommendations about access, and to our child when older? Crikey.
Okay, so yeah, there's two very clear strands to this. So I'm not going to give legal advice because it's not within my realm. But what I would say is that's what you're seeking here. And certainly that's what I'm reading. So your different questions are, you have one about the court process and about what's involved. And if you've never had to negotiate family court proceedings, that is a great big unknown. So it's totally understandable to feel, how do I do this? And what I'm going to suggest to you, without making any assumptions, if you have a solicitor, bring these questions directly to your solicitor. If you don't, or if you need some support with that, you could go online to legalaid.ie or legalaidboard.ie. It's something like that. You'll find it by Googling Legal Aid Ireland anyway. And there's a really informative website there of everything that you're talking about. In the court process, there are assessments that the court can order that would address what you're talking about here. And it's going to be, you know, it could be a section 32, a 31, a 47. It depends on what comes up in court and what the judge decides. But there is a process, is what I'm saying, that can help you with this. It's about getting that information, making sure it's the right one for you, and talking to people who do this all the time. So I would go to your solicitor or to Legal Aid on that one. You could also seek some support from an organization such as One Family, who can be very helpful as well and offer some therapeutic supports, but also just psychosocial, emotional supports and support in negotiating all of this. The second side, though, where maybe I can be a bit more helpful, is about the talking to your child. So your child is 5, you're separated 2 years, your child was 3 when the relationship broke down. Your child knows you as co-parenting apart rather than together. I would always say, do not instruct your child about her father, what he is or isn't, or what she should or shouldn't think or feel about him. Rather, reassure her that you will always be open, you will always be truthful about things with her, and she can always check confusions or uh-oh feelings or anything that doesn't quite make sense. She can always bring that to you. And there are no secrets between parents and children, so that there's no such thing as don't tell mommy or don't tell daddy. Say both. You would never say don't tell daddy this, and it would never be okay to say don't tell mommy this. So you keep that open, you talk about what you can do, and then you do it. You are open, you are honest, you are truthful, you're curious. Any questions you have, anything I can help you with, and you make sure that you are playful with her in how you do this, so she doesn't feel like, oh gosh, here comes the big interrogation. Children will shut down as soon as they feel that. Mm. So I think that that's the best approach I could give on this one, in the absence of other information.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And there's not that much, but it seems like most of the information in here is to do with her relationship with him and his previous wife's relationship with him. That may or may not be relevant to whether he's a good parent or not.
Exactly. And that's why I think you don't instruct children how to feel or think about their parents, because children are smart. They're wise. They pick up on everything. Even when we think we're being subtle, children get it. They get what we're doing. And the best thing is to really scaffold up and safeguard your relationship with her. And that's what she will lean into and turn towards when she has any confusions or uncertainties.
Right, you are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do have to take a break. After that, a teenager in her first relationship. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune is still with us for our parenting slot. Now, my daughter is in second year. She's just started her first relationship with a boy from her school. She wants to bring him over to the house. I'd like to set some boundaries about the visit. How do I have this chat with her and what should I ask for? Other than don't let him in the house ever.
But you know, I think it's, you know, this is so exciting for her. And one of the best things you can do as her parent is be excited with her, you know, and also just know she's not trying to do this in secret. You know, she is very much doing this in the open, saying, hey, I've got this new boyfriend. I'm excited for you to meet him to meet you guys. I want to bring him over. So that tells me that she is open to discussing this with you, or at least that she could be. So I think you state with her, excuse me, Sean, sorry, a little frog in my throat. Just state how excited you are to meet him and gently yet firmly say, you know, he's always welcome here, just as any friend of yours is. But, you know, let me know first, because it's really important that I, you know, because families could have things on. You don't just land in with somebody. So just holding a boundary on that, let me know if he's coming over. And just so you know, it's really important you guys hang out downstairs or in the garden, or if you're in your bedroom with an open door, whatever your comfort level is. You know, you might be like, absolutely not, now that you've said bedroom. But if you are in the bedroom, you know, this is just something we're going to be doing. And you don't have to over explain that, because you're the parent. So you're just saying, always welcome, happy to meet him, excited about this, but here are the boundaries. And I'm telling you up front, I'm not accusing you of anything or suspicious, but this is the way our family is. Now, we don't know in this letter if there are younger siblings, because you're also having an example in the house as well, if there are younger children. So I think you do that. And I think you could add, because she is being open and excited about this, that you hope she will always be comfortable bringing questions about her relationship, anything to do with it, and maybe be a little more specific, you know, about how it's going or any questions about sex or whatever it might be. I really hope you always feel comfortable bringing that to me, because I am always comfortable talking to you about it. Now, if you're like, I'm not that comfortable, then maybe practice some of that, you know, with somebody else, your co-parent, a friend, a family member, so that when you're delivering it to her, it is fluid and comfortable in how you say it. But I actually think, you know, this is exciting. Treat it as something exciting, and then you're just holding a boundary. But don't meet her with suspicion in this, because she's clearly looking forward to him meeting you.
Yeah, indeed. I suppose even if you mention any sort of boundary, you're kind of tangentially talking about sex anyway.
Yeah, and I don't think you should dance around that, Sean, to be honest. I think you should name it. But, you know, she's only bringing him over to meet you. So if you say he's coming over, you having sex, it feels like you're rushing the conversation.
Yes.
She's like, I just wanted him to meet you. Where are you going with this? And he's her first boyfriend as well, or, you know, that's her first relationship anyway. So I think that you could meet him first, get to know him, but you're already saying anything about your relationship, sex, contraception. I'd give a few examples. Like, I wouldn't just say, bring anything to me. That's too vague. It's too abstract. But you're not going to say, so now sit down till we talk about it just yet. I mean, you will be. And I hope that, you know, second year, she's what, 13, 14 years old, that this isn't the first time that you've been talking about sex. It likely is something that you're just revisiting rather than starting. And at least ideally, if you're saying, no, we really haven't had that conversation, then yes, meet the boy first, okay? And then say to her, you know, relationships are really exciting, and it's really important that we have conversations about all aspects of relationships, and that would include, and you go into the other stuff.
Right. My six-year-old son recently had his friends over on a play date, and I noticed that my son's friends are constantly mocking my son over his small ears. He has a medical condition, and as a result, it leaves him with small-looking ears. It makes him quite upset, but I don't know what to do. He doesn't want to stop being friends with these boys. I don't want to give out to them, as I'm not their mother, and neither do I want to start a fight with the other boys' parents about it. What's your advice?
Well, it's a tricky one, but, you know, this is happening in your home. You know, it's on a play date in your house because you're observing it, you're hearing it. And you know what? You can call out unkind words in your own home. And that's not about chastising or starting a fight or taking a parental role where there isn't one. It's about saying what is and isn't okay in your home within your family. So you're saying, you know, something like, you guys are always welcome here to play. Just to remind you, we don't comment on people's physical appearance or their bodies in our home. So I'm asking you not to do that. And you say it like that. It's not confrontational. Nobody's in trouble, but you're naming it, because children are doing this and they may not be aware. you know, they're six, they're little kids. You know, they may not be aware of how those words are landing. And while you're saying your son is quite upset, I don't know what that exactly means. Is he upset with them? Is he crying? How do you know he's upset? And might his friends be aware? Now, look, we could say he doesn't need to cry with his friends for them to be aware that that's not appropriate. But actually, children need help with boundaries at this age. They need help with that social serve and return. And when I say something, it lands with an impact and I'm responsible for that. They don't have that at 6 years old. So I think you want to name it. Just come out very clear, gentle yet firm. That's not okay in here. You're not going to do it. And then wonder with your son afterwards, how did he feel the play date went? What was the best bit about it? Was there anything on the play date that he wished didn't happen or he'd like to change? Don't direct him to feel how you feel about it. Just be really clear. Wasn't that upsetting? I thought that was really mean. Did you think that was mean? You don't want to go there, but bring him to a place where he is safe to say to you, actually, that upset me. And then you can work with that and talk to him about, well, let's pretend that I'm your friends and let's pretend that I have said that mean thing. What might you say back to me? Okay, let's switch roles. You be them, I'll be you. And you can role play out positive, affirming statements that he can say in the moment and he can practice that with you in a safe way. But if he's like, it was fine, it was fine, it was fine, but you know your child enough to go, I hear your words, but your shoulders are up at your ears, they're telling me it wasn't fine, you're flushing red, I'm reading you that it wasn't fine. You could say, I'm really glad you were okay with it, but just so you know, I wasn't. I felt uncomfortable when I heard those words. And it's okay if you want to talk about it, but I needed to tell you it's not okay for those words to be said in our home because this is your safe place. It's not okay for you to be spoken about like that. And you let him know that it's okay for him to be cross or hurt or upset about those things.
Yeah, do 6 year olds go in? Can 6 year olds go in for that kind of sustained teasing that you might hear older children do?
I mean, yes, if they're, you know, because 6 year olds can be very much say what you see. So if his ears are smaller and his mother knows there's a reason for that, 6 year olds might not. They might just be, hey, you've got smaller ears. You're the kid with the small ears. You're the, and they say, and too often we shut kids down and go, don't say that, shh, shh, and we don't tell them why. You know, we don't actually say, actually, now that you've said that, I wonder how it would feel if somebody kept pointing out something on your body. We don't talk about bodies like that. Did you know that all bodies are different? No bodies look the same. Bodies are different shapes and size. And you go down that road of teaching that actually we don't, one way or the other, comment on people's bodies, but we accept that it's a fact that not everybody will look the same on the outside, but we're all the same on the inside and entitled to the same respect and treatment. How would you feel if? And they might kind of get, I'm hearing I shouldn't do it, but the rest of it went a bit over my head. That's okay. Keep saying it. And when I'm 7 and when I'm 8 and when I'm 9, I am getting it, but I'm not hearing it for the first time. This is something you've been saying all along with me. You have to kind of come at this with teaching respect, tolerance, and embracing difference as part of how we all live.
Yeah. Just actually going back to the question we had in about girl who's having her boyfriend come over to visit for the first time. Further to that advice on the first boyfriend, how would you deal with my strict husband who will not entertain a boyfriend coming over to visit? It's like he thinks that's the end of his little girl.
Oh, but you see, there's the answer, isn't it? You know, it's about dad's fears. That's really a dad who's like, I can't see my daughter growing up. And you know what? She's growing up regardless.
Yeah.
And he's either going to be a part of that journey in an active, participating way, supporting her and available to her, or she will other him and say, he doesn't get it. I can't bring that stuff to him. I can't be open with him. And she'll pull away. So help him to understand that this is his fear. He's feeling he's losing something, but actually the relationship is changing with his daughter. But the way to stay relevant in her life is to stay on board.
Yeah, really. Yeah, because if he does that, he's anything he's worried about mightn't be under his roof.
Exactly. Yeah.
My daughter has started demanding to play video games. She's 8, and I know that sometimes when she goes to friends' houses, the parents have no problem letting the girls do that, but I don't agree with it. And I don't want her to become addicted to it, so I'm flatly refusing. I feel bad, though, as she says all her friends are allowed to play video games and she's being left out because she isn't allowed. Should I give in and stick to my guns?
There's something about the language in this one that just intrigues me, like giving in or sticking to my guns, like they're the only alternatives of each other. And this idea of, you know, should I just give in to this, the demand? It's also about this age group when children are really good at the pester power. You know, my friends do, everyone does. It's not me. Come on, come on, come on, come on. They can nearly Mrs. Doyle us into going, go on, just stop asking me. And we give in. I would much prefer that you focus on, do I agree to her doing this? Am I happy to consent to her doing this? Because that way you're choosing the transition and you're on board with it in a very open-minded, informed way, as opposed to, but sure, look, I did my best, what could I do? It just pushes you into a passive position on this that isn't going to be helpful in the long run. Be clear as to why you're opposed, because there's a lot here about you don't want her to become addicted. I mean, the research does not bear that out, the research we have available at the moment. And it's really more about a compulsion that can come in. Kids can feel compelled to keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. That's not quite the same as an addiction. Now, research is research. It's always evolving and developing. But just be careful about language with that. If that is your genuine fear, then let's kind of demystify that a bit. I think it's about keeping a balance, because play patterns change in middle childhood, this 8 to 12 year old age group. And we do see them migrate towards, you know, scooters and, you know, bikes and screen play and play of this nature. Again, the research does show us, though, is that if children of this age, if imaginative, creative play is still made available, appealing and inviting, they will migrate to it just as much as the other type. So it's about a balance, that if she's doing some gaming or video play, that it's not the only way that she's playing. It may not even be the main way that she's playing. But if she has this heightened curiosity, if her friends are there and you're thinking, look, if she's not addicted, could I come at this in a way of considering a trial and naming it as such? You know, saying to her, going, I'm not sure about it, actually. I feel a little uncomfortable, but I'm open to trying it. So I will sit with you. I'm going to wear a headset while you're playing. We'll play, you know, for 20 minutes, 4 days a week. That's arbitrary, whatever boundary you put in place. And then you and I will think about, is it good for you or not? But I'm not saying yes, I'm saying trial. And then you keep reminding her of that, because no better than an 8-year-old to say, hey, I've been doing it now for a week, we're in. But I think it's about being clear why you're opposed to it. If you're listening and going, I'm just not comfortable with this, I don't think it would be good for her based on other variables, trust your parental instinct. And it's okay for her friends to play it, but you're not okay with it. So the answer in your family is no, not no never, but no right now. And it is something you'll revisit with her.
Yeah. Plus also, you know, all my friends are doing it. You can take it to the bank. That means no, all your friends are not doing it.
Oh, they're definitely not all doing it, but they're definitely all saying that for sure. And that's not going to be the only time you hear this. It's going to be all my friends have phones. All my friends have this. All my friends are allowed to go, you know, on public transport alone, or to the shopping centre alone, or to the cinema, whatever it is, there'll always be it, but everyone can except me. But your responsibility is with your own child. Pester power is called that because it works. So it's about being able to say, I can see this is really hard for you, and I know you'd really love me to say yes. Let me explain why I'm saying no.
Yeah. The texter, just one reaction to the other text I'd read out on husband won't let the daughter have a boyfriend in the house. That dad will force his daughter and her boyfriend into a field or down an alley to do their canoodling. Canoodling that probably wouldn't be done in the house, I might add. I have no idea how to spell canoodling. That's a good point. I don't know either. Is it spelled C-A-N? I'm not sure. And Jimmy says, now, Joanna didn't say have a conversation with her about sex, but Jimmy says, having a conversation about sex with your daughter in second year, my daughter is nearly 3, and I'm sticking to the assumption I'll have the chat with her on the eve of our wedding, says Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy, good luck with that, because she definitely is going to hit you with a question any day now. Yeah. 3 years old.
Good luck with being a grandfather, Jimmy, before that time. Joanna, as ever, thanks a million. Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break. After that, how to talk to a science denier.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.